You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 20 June. We've got a Bank of England rate decision at 1 p.m. our time. No change expected. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Motete Tulari from RMB. I want to touch on the rand. Assuming this GNU holds, how much stronger can the currency go in the short to medium term? Or is that completely and absolutely a mug's game? Rian Lentzbach, Head of Education at Markets Club, managing risks as a newbie trader. And then Dr. Celia Bala, she, Head of Mission Diversity, Equity and Inclusion at the World Economic Forum, their latest gender gap report. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: navigating the inflation landscape, what latest US CPI print could mean for the rand and local interest rates. And Business Day, Health Funders Association hoping for NHI rethink under new government. Medical Scheme Group upbeat that there will be opportunities to engage on a more pragmatic approach to health reform. I've got to say, with the GNU, isn't NHI dead? And isn't that just too many acronyms? Morning markets: US was closed for Juneteenth. Over in the east, it's mostly green. Sydney up 0.2, mostly red. Tokyo down 0.6%. Hong Kong off 0.5% and Tencent a 0.25% lower. Commodities mostly green. Gold, 2,348. Brent a little weaker at 85.12. Platinum, $998. And palladium, $910. Rand, 17.95. Bitcoin, 65,100. Top 40 opening call, green open, 310 points or 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony and I with Motete Tulari, Head of FX Execution at RMB. Motete, always appreciate the early morning time. As I mentioned in the intro there, we've certainly seen the rand stronger. It's been 1880 just in the last couple of weeks. It's now sub 18. We chatted about a month ago and I asked you about the risks, and the list was long. It was all sorts of bits and pieces out there. It's doing well. Is there a call to how much lower it can go? Or, as I said in the intro, is that a bit of a mug's game trying to figure where the rand might be? Do you and your colleagues look at this and say, we have a target?
Good morning, Simon. As you say, I mean, the rand has maintained its recent rally. Obviously, yesterday, smashing past that $18 mark. And I think we saw ourselves at a 10-month high, obviously, as President Ramaphosa was inaugurated again for his second term. Now, I think the markets are clearly betting on a new economic course under the government of national unity, followed by what now obviously is going to be the announcement of his cabinet in the coming days, which will take center stage for the local markets. And I think we'll also need to keep a close eye on the size of the cabinet as well as the selected ministers for each function of government. Now, the rand strength at this point in time comes at a point where there's been a high degree of volatility ahead of the elections and during the elections. And I think at this point in time, it's turned to hope after the post-election negotiations between all the relevant political parties proceeded peacefully, and that offered some stability to the market. Now, another piece of optimism is being priced into the rand is that based on the assumptions that the ANC is acting in good faith about sharing power and that the much-needed growth and fiscal reforms are being implemented by the government of national unity, this will raise expectations of good governance and also the enhanced structural reform. And the one thing that I also like is that the political parties are still backing Operation Vulindlela. That was the president's initiative, and that could also boost additional growth. Now, the last time the rand traded below 18 was in July 2023. Now, at this point, you said the markets are also focused as to what's happening in the US and in terms of what the Fed is going to do in terms of the timing of interest rate cuts, but also I suspect what's also going to keep us very volatile is the upcoming data that is going to come from the US. And also, despite the wave of relief and catching up that we've done following these elections, the Rand will still be taking its cue and direction from, you know, the offshore market. But I think the five key takeaway points that we really need to look at from a Rand perspective, and also that could strengthen us even further and see us around that 1750, is the fact that, one, if we have less load shedding, that will improve the numbers somewhat. If we have low inflation and also a cut in interest rate, the two-pot spending is also another, you know, critical issue that the markets need to think about. The fourth thing is the potential for Transnet, rail and port volumes to start, you know, growing and obviously increasing, and we see those exports going. And the fifth factor could be also the economic recovery offshore. I mean, if all those things combine themselves and they play themselves out, we could be looking at a potential scenario where the Rand is much stronger at 1750 and also South African growth above 1 and close to 2% for this year.
Yeah, I take your point. Still lots of moving parts. Although while you were talking, the Rand strengthened another 1 cent. So maybe we should keep you chatting. But we'll leave it there. With Etta Tulari, Head of FX Execution at RMB. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. What's your call on the Rand? How much stronger can it get? Or does it just weaken out from here? I think to the point that Mateta makes is there's still a lot of moving parts. Sentiment is on the right side for a change, however. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
Hear that? Nothing. Your money can do more when it blocks out the noise, as hard as it is these days. When you invest in the Stanlib Balanced Cautious Fund, we manage the risks so that you can see stable inflation-beating returns through market cycles. Invest with more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now with Rowan Lansbach, Head of Education at Markets Club. Rowan, appreciate the time this morning. Trading as a possible second income, or perhaps even a primary income with the unemployment we have in our country. I suspect this is something which many people would like to have. Is it something which is practical and doable for the majority of our citizens?
Oh, good morning once again. So it's an honor to be here early this morning. Well, look, obviously for me, I've been trading full time for a couple of years. But once again, that shouldn't be your initial go-to. Trading is and remains the biggest market in the world. Mm-hmm. So if you're getting into the trading, you need to take your time to be consistent first. And over a couple of years, yes, it is obtainable. I have multiple guys that I know personally that is trading full time, but obviously after a couple of years, after multiple steps taken, after building your foundation, after obviously mastering the markets after multiple years.
I take your point, and particularly, I mean, I suppose it's like any skill. You need to learn the ropes of it. I imagine, I mean, there are a couple of key areas. One, I suspect, is just managing risk and understanding the risk you're taking on, particularly if you're doing a leveraged product such as derivatives. Risk management becomes absolutely critical.
Yeah, I believe risk management for me is the number one key factor. I mean, the reason people don't enter trades, the reason people panic and close their trades is because of bad risk management. Mm-hmm. So if you know exactly what you're going to lose, if you know exactly what you're going to risk, and you're comfortable with that risk, once again, you don't mind taking it. But if you're over-risking because obviously you're trying to become a profitable trader or becoming a full-time trader tomorrow, that obviously leads to you taking unnecessary losses through bad risk management.
Yeah, I see your point there. And it is, I mean, a lot of trading is psychology. I mean, it is around mindset. Roger Federer was talking around the fact that he only won just over half of his points recently. And it's that trading isn't about getting it or making a profit on every single trade. And I suspect that that's difficult for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I believe psychology is a key factor to your trading. They say trading is 90% psychology, and a lot of traders don't always believe that. They believe that if you get the best next strategy or anything in that sense, that's how you obtain profitability. But your psychology will be a direct reflection of your trades. And I do believe it starts outside trading. If you build good habits by making your bed, taking a cold shower, going to the gym, it sounds like stupid things, but end of the day, it will pull through into your trading because a strong psychology, a strong mind is how you think and obviously become like the 10% that is obviously profitable.
And it is in that regard. I mean, it's the market is going to batter you from time to time. I mean, that is just, I mean, in my experience of trading, there are times when I can do everything right, but it just feels like the world is against me.
100%. I think we, after 9 years of trading, I still have days and even weeks like that where it just feels like the market doesn't make sense. Some mornings I wake up and it's like pretty simple. I know exactly what I'm looking for. And some mornings you wake up and it's like French for you. It just doesn't make sense. And people always ask me, like, do you still feel that way? I mean, every now and then it becomes that way. And it's just because you may be going through a psychological dip or anything in that sense, or the market structure changed a little bit. You don't understand what's happening for now, or there's so many elements actually to it.
Is there, I mean, do you have preferred instruments or products that you're trading? Do you have preferred perhaps time zones that you're trading in? I mean, for example, I know someone you trade Singapore because he's in Sonyak. It's a bad example, perhaps, but I mean, for you, are there certain products or asset classes that you say this just works better?
Well, for me, like I said, there's no one-stop shop for everyone. I believe that every single person will react differently to different markets. For me personally, I prefer trading gold. It's just something that I've been spending a lot of time with. I prefer trading it in the US session. But it once again comes down to my time frame. When can I trade? When do I have the availability to trade? I find I had some time between 12 and 4. Figured out gold between that specific session, and I've been just focusing on that for the past 8 years. So it's way different than if I study, for example, crypto. I do understand crypto, but it's just too volatile, too much of a risk for myself. And that obviously leaves me in the dark. And the reason that I'm not able to take that risk is because I'm afraid of what's going to happen tomorrow, maybe a crash or something in that sense.
I like that. What you've essentially done is you've specialized, and I take your point. For you, that speciality is gold. It's the early US session. It could be something else for somebody else. But you're not trying to be the everyman trader. You're kind of saying, let me find my own niche, which works for you.
I believe that's the most important part about trading. Is a lot of traders think I'm going to buy a course from this guy so on Facebook or anything in that sense and become profitable. But at the end of the day, I can teach you everything I've learned in 9 years. It's going to take me some time. But if you don't make it your own, you'll never understand why I'm doing specific things. People will always ask me 12 to 4. And without even me telling you, you need to actually go and put in the work to go and figure out why 12 to 4. That's the right question you're asking. But you need to go and figure it out, because if you understand it, that's how you get profitable, not through me understanding it.
Yeah, I take that. And it, as I say, it's going to be different for everyone, but find what works. We'll leave it there, Ruan Landsman, Head of Education Markets Club. Appreciate the early morning.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Celia Bella, Head of Mission Diversity, Equity and Inclusion at the World Economic Forum. Celia, I appreciate the time today. The Global Gender Gap Report for 2024, just been published by yourselves, focuses on four key areas: economic participation and opportunity, educational attainment, health survival, and political empowerment. The short answer is, things are getting better, but slowly. The report points out 5 generations at the current speed to actually close the gender gap. And that's more than 100 years.
That is correct, yes. So what we're finding in this year's report is that we have edged forward ever so slightly in closing the global gender gap since last year. But the progress, as you say, is very, very slow. And it's slowed down further, both compared to last year and also compared to pre-crisis times. So we're currently at 104 years to parity at the current speed of travel. And we've lost more than a generation since 2019 due to some of the regressions that we saw during the pandemic. Now, you mentioned that we cover four dimensions in the index. If we look more closely at those, we can actually see that globally, we're quite close to parity on health and educational attainment. The big gaps that really need our urgent attention are in economic participation and in political empowerment. So in terms of the bigger picture, what we're seeing is that educational parity is not at all translating into parity in the labor market. Whichever way we look at labor market data, whether it's at labor force participation, at informal employment, representation in the industries of the future, pay, senior leadership, we find gender gaps. So that's, you know, one of the big insights. And the other big insight is that political power is still very much out of the reach for a disproportionate number of women. And in general, one of the toughest ones to crack seems to be representation in senior leadership, both in the public sphere and in the private sector. There's also good news, which is that while the gaps in the economy and in politics are wide, we are seeing some movement. So we have seen, compared to last year, that there's relatively more women re-entering the labor force, which is coming through globally in an improved economic participation score compared to last year. And also, if we look at the longer time horizon, we've been publishing this report for 18 years now. And if we track movement in political empowerment there, we actually see quite a bit of movement since 2006. So over the last 18 editions, we've seen almost 10 percentage point improvement on this dimension of the Global Gender Gap Index out of a score of 100. So a movement of 8 percentage points over 2006. And we're in fact this year at an all-time high in terms of representation of women in parliament, which stands at a third of the gap closed.
It is the woman in parliament, which is the one where significant lagging, 22.5%. And obviously massively important, because this is where decisions that affect everyone's important. And that's where we need that diversity. We're seeing a lot of elections happening this year around the world. Is that expected to make much difference? I mean, we've just had India, we've had one locally in South Africa, we've got the UK and the US coming. Is that going to help?
Exactly. So as you point out, the gap in terms of political empowerment is currently still the largest. We're just 22% of the gap closed. And we do see all the elections that are happening this year as a big opportunity to really make a push on closing some of the gaps in terms of political empowerment.
If we look at STEM fields and AI talent, one of the accusations, particularly around STEM, particularly around AI, is that it is male-dominated, it is white male-dominated, and we see a lot of that coming out in decisions and processes. I'm thinking the images that come from sort of DALL-E 3 and the like. Are we seeing improvements in those important STEM fields?
We are indeed seeing improvements in STEM in general, as well as in AI in particular. I think the caveat again there is that gaps are still large. They are large in general in the workforce representation. They become even bigger as you move up the hierarchy in organizations. So we look at what we call the drop to the top, which is comparing women's representation in STEM at the entry level as well as at the C-suite level. And we see more than halving of representation between the entry level and the top leadership levels when it comes to STEM. We also see this is something that we looked at in last year's report. We actually see quite a bit of a drop between women getting STEM degrees and then moving into STEM employment. So if we want to tackle this gap, this would be one of the things to look at. You know, how can we ensure a smoother transition between the STEM degrees and then the first employment, as well as then building the talent pipeline all the way up to senior leadership. What we are seeing in terms of the AI representation, indeed, based on LinkedIn data, we actually see increased representation of women in the AI field, still underrepresented, but there seems to be some movement, which is the good news.
The top country is Iceland, and they do seem to certainly repeatedly do well in the space. In terms of the sub-Saharan continent, we've got Namibia up at 8th, and we've got South Africa at 18th. Those are good scores, all things considered. You know, as someone in South Africa, it's not often we rate high on a global survey, and certainly Namibia top 10 is significant.
Yes. So as you say, two economies from sub-Saharan Africa in the top 20. What we're seeing here is that both Namibia and South Africa are scoring above average when it comes to economic participation and opportunity. Mm-hmm. as well as on the political empowerment dimension. Now, that said, the recent elections in South Africa have not yet been taken into account. So this is on the basis of the last government, but this will be reflected in next year's report. But in general, for the economies that we see performing well in the top 20, they usually stand out in terms of the political representation. This is what sets them apart from other economies.
If you've got a global average down at 22.5 and you've got representation in parliament, that'll certainly help the score. We'll leave it there. That's Celia Bala, Head of Mission Diversity, Equity and Inclusion, World Economic Forum. Appreciate the time. We're chatting with Jimmy Mwaha yesterday about that massive rally on the JC, which continued into Wednesday, although a little bit slower, but still there. We asked if you thought that it could hold. Over half of you said only if the GNU holds, rest was split between it'll fade quick and yes, onwards and upwards. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast, just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.